Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Wednesday, September 18th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we are going to gather around the virtual water cooler and talk about what we've been up to. My name is Ben Pearson. I am an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor and chief film critic, Chris Evangelista.
Hi.
All right, Chris, we haven't really been doing or reading much, so let's jump right into what we've been watching. I watched a movie called Red Rooms that I think technically was released last year, but is getting a theatrical release in the United States this year. And it's written and directed by this person named Pascal Plant. I'm going to try to describe what this is about, and then I'm curious what you think about this, because I know that you actually wrote a review of this movie for Slash Film. I'm going to link to that in the show notes. I purposefully did not read your review because I wanted to talk to you about this movie before I sort of spoiled myself about your thoughts about it. So the film is set in Montreal, and it's centered on the trial of a guy who is accused of committing horrific murders of three teenage girls and live streaming their deaths to buyers on the dark web. And there's video proof of the crimes, but the guy's wearing a mask, so you can't clearly see the killer's face. So there's this big trial that captures the attention of the whole country. And the main characters are these two women who wake up really early every day to attend the trial, and they sit in the audience and just watch all of this play out. It's obvious why one of them, who's named Clementine, is there, because she's a basically like a fangirl of the accused killer, and she thinks that he's innocent, and maybe she's even in love with this guy from afar. It's kind of tough to say, but she's definitely like obsessed with him in a pretty unhealthy way. The much more interesting character, I think, is the character of Kellyanne, who is a professional fashion model. She's a high-stakes poker player. And she lives in this sleek high-rise apartment building and seems to have a pretty good life overall. So why does she care about this trial? The movie kind of offers a few clues about that, but never really explicitly gives an answer to that question, which is just a really fascinating choice in a world where we're used to having everything spoon-fed to us. So I guess with all of that as like the setup, what did you make of this movie, Red Rooms, Chris?
I thought this was fantastic. I gave this a very positive review. This movie kind of like blew me away. And I don't want to give away like spoilers or anything like that, but there's like one scene in particular set in the courtroom that like made my like skin crawl. I was like, oh my God, I can't believe they're like doing this.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Yes.
Yeah. Like it's just the way it plays out and the way everyone reacts to it. I was just like, oh my God, like, I don't know. This really impressed me. This is like one of my favorite movies of the year. It's not easy to watch. It's an upsetting movie, but I was really blown away by this.
What did you make of the choice not to show the graphic violence on screen?
I really like that because I think it makes it even more upsetting because we hear like sounds of it, and that causes us like we have to like imagine what's happening, and that's like an old rule of horror. Like what you can't see is much scarier than what you can see because your mind is forced to sort of like fill in the blanks, and your imagination is always going to be worse than what you actually see in the film.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I had a very similar thought. Shout out to Pascal Plant, the director of this movie, because it opens, or maybe not the opening shot, but in the opening minutes, there's this really, really, really long, seemingly unbroken take that takes you into the courtroom and sort of lays out all of the facts of the case, and you get a good sense of the stakes of this trial and what's going on. And a big part of this movie is the family members of the victims are sitting there in the courtroom, and they're basically forced to share space with these kind of gawker women, these onlookers who are just there for their own bizarre reasons. And occasionally there's some drama between those two. I mean, it never really like flares up into anything super huge, like big confrontations or anything like that. But like just the fact that the victims of this family can turn their heads and see people who they know are in this room for their own, again, bizarre reasons is just like a setting that is rife with drama. We'll say that. So yeah, just a really, really interesting movie, and incredibly well put together and really creepy. And I saw actually in the email that I got a press release about this movie that quoted you in the press release, Chris, saying that you thought it was one of the most disturbing movies of the year or something like that. So
yeah,
good stuff there. So Red Rooms is in theaters right now, or some theaters anyway. I just checked to see if it was playing in a theater around me. And as far as I know, it's not playing anywhere in the state of Florida right now. And I looked to see if it was playing in Georgia, and it's only playing in a theater in Atlanta. So I'm not sure what the rollout plan is, if it's going to be rolling out to wider, you know, more cities in the coming weeks or whatever, but put it on your radar if you care about sort of unsettling. Would you call this a horror movie, Chris? It's like a horror thriller.
I would
thriller.
Definitely say it's a horror movie. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So that's called Red Rooms. I also saw a film called The Teacher's Lounge, which is streaming on Netflix now. Have you seen this, Chris?
I have not, no.
So this was co-written and directed by a German filmmaker. I'm going to butcher the name, so I apologize. But I think it's Ilker Chatak. And it was nominated for Best International Feature Film at the Oscars earlier this year. And I'm just now catching up to it. I remember some folks talking about it last year and saying good things about it. So this is a movie that takes place almost entirely on the campus of a junior high school in Germany. And it's shot in a very straightforward manner. And its stakes are pretty small, but it plays like a thriller. My stomach was in knots watching this. It's so incredibly well executed. So I'll try to give a broad overview of what it's about. So at this school, there have been several thefts before the movie begins. And one of the students is stereotyped and falsely accused of stealing stuff at the school. And the main character, who's a seventh grade teacher named Carla, realizes that it's probably one of the teachers who has actually been doing the stealing. So she sets this trap in the teacher's lounge by leaving some money in view of her open laptop, which is secretly recording video. And that's all I'll say in terms of the setup, but things quickly begin to spin pretty wildly out of control. And Carla has some good intentions, but this is a fascinating movie to watch because she makes so many incorrect decisions, or sort of dunderheaded decisions. And some of the time you're practically yelling at the screen to try to convince her not to do what she's doing. But other times it's not as clear that she's screwing up until a little bit later on. And she really starts to realize the consequences of the decisions that she makes. So this movie engages with like race and class and journalism and surveillance and all these big topics. And there are no easy answers here. So I would say if you're looking for something that's slightly challenging, but like really, really well done, The Teacher's Lounge is streaming on Netflix. And that certainly fit the bill for me. So have you heard anything about this one, Chris?
No, I've never even heard of this, but I'm intrigued. It sounds very interesting.
Yeah, it was cool. And then real quick, I just wanted to mention that I started watching 30 Rock. I just watched the first episode. Is 30 Rock a big show for you, Chris? Did you watch this one? I know Brad loves it.
You know, I watched it when it aired, and I remember loving it when it aired. And a few years ago, I was like, I'm going to go back and rewatch it from the start. And I watched the first episode, and I was like, this is bad. I immediately like went and read online, and I've seen a lot of people say like a similar thing where the first season and the first episode are kind of shaky, but then it eventually finds its footing. But it kind of like soured me on rewatching it from the whole thing. Cause I was just like, I did not enjoy this first episode. So I don't know.
Yeah. It was so strange to watch it because the first episode aired in 2006, which just feels like a true lifetime ago. And it's so strange to see everybody so young. I mean, obviously that's a very obvious thing to say, but, it was so striking turning on the show. Cause I think I dipped in and out. I've probably seen whatever, 7 or 8 episodes of the show over the course of its run. But the stuff that I've seen from it came near the end. So seeing how this world is introduced and everything. Yeah, it was just a fascinating thing. So I will try to report back with my 30 Rock journey as I move along here, but,
nice.
Let's take a break and then we'll come back and talk about what you've been watching, Chris. Okay, what else have you had a chance to see? We talked about Red Rooms. What else have you seen recently?
Yeah, so I'm going to talk about two movies, both of which I've reviewed for Slash Film. Both the reviews are up on Slash Film right now, so I hope people will go read them. I got to see Megalopolis, which is, of course, the famous Francis Ford Coppola movie that he's been trying to make for about 40 years now, and he made it by self-financing it. He like sold part of his winery and he spent $120 million of his own money to make this movie. And it's fascinating. It's a fascinating movie. It's not entirely successful. It's a messy movie. I don't, I didn't love it, but I love that it exists. And so I'm sort of like, I'm of two minds of it. Like, I think it has a lot of problems. It's a flawed movie. It's a messy movie. The script is kind of all over the place. Some of the scenes are kind of ugly to look at. But I'm so glad he finally got to make this, because I would rather have like an interesting, I don't want to call it a failure because I don't think it's a failure, but I would rather have an interesting, messy movie from a true artist than 99% of the absolute bullshit we get every month. You know, I've already seen people being like, this movie is gonna flop, and it's like, what, like, God, who cares? Like, I don't want to step on, you know, Ryan Scott, who is our box office guru, who talks about box office all the time, but Jesus Christ, I could care less about box office. Like, and I feel like anyone who cares so much about box office is like kind of missing the point of movies. Like, we as a society should not care about whether a movie is a hit or not. Like, it's none of our business. Like, we are not accountants. We should not give a shit about that. We should care about the movie itself. Like, and I would much rather have an artist like Coppola making something on his own terms than have it be like this middle managed bullshit that venture capitalists are pumping out like right now. Like, you know, like, yeah. so much of the current movie landscape is determined by these people who clearly do not actually care about art. They just want to turn a quick buck, and that's depressing. And Coppola is from this era where, you know, he's from the new Hollywood era where real artists were given the keys to sort of just do whatever they wanted, and they turned out masterpieces in the process. And, you know, again, this is not a masterpiece. This is not like a great movie, but it has these big, bold ideas in it, and it's really weird, and it's just a strange film, and I'm glad it exists. And does it suck that it won't be a big hit? Sure, but I'm glad it's out there, and I'm glad he got to make it on his own terms.
Yeah, so just because Ryan's not here, I just want to step in on his behalf just for a second and just say that I think he's tried to express before that the reason he cares so much about box office is because the industry is so reactive and so risk averse that I think he tracks this stuff so closely because it's an indicator of what studios might make next or what might tip them off to what's popular or what is possible, or everybody's always looking for the next big trend or whatever. So I think that's kind of Ryan's approach to things. I think he's not an accountant. He doesn't care about that stuff either. He's not an investor in any of these movie studios. But I think, you know, I just don't want him to be catching strays here when he's not here to speak up. So I just wanted to offer that real quick. I am curious though about your experience watching Megalopolis. Did you have a chance to see it at a screening in a theater, or did they send you a link for it, or what? Because sometimes we get links in advance.
Yeah, I got to see this in a theater. It was a press screening. I saw it in IMAX, actually, which was nice because there's a lot of big, weird, sweeping visuals in it and stuff like that. So yeah, I saw it in a theater. I'm very curious to see how people react to this, if they react at all. I do think people who want to see it will go see it. I do feel like a lot of people are just like, I'll wait till it's online and they'll watch it that way. So, which is kind of a bummer, but that's the world we live in now. So.
Yeah. I want to know, but I kind of don't want to know. So if you could thread the needle on this answer, Chris, I would really appreciate it. I've heard rumors that there's a part in Megalopolis where a person talks to the screen, a human person in your theater addresses the screen. And yes. I don't really know the context around that. And that's the part that I'm trying to maybe avoid in case it's like a special moment or something. I don't really want to ruin exactly what happens for people, but do you think that there's any way to, there's obviously not a way to replicate that in the home viewing experience. They're not going to send somebody to every single person's home who's watching the movie at a certain time. Although that would be an incredible use of money if Francis Ford Coppola wants to pay for that. But do you think that there's any way that the movie itself will work without that component added to it?
Yeah. So at my press screening, they did it. They had someone stand up. But the way they did it, and I'm assuming this is so it can play in theaters everywhere, is someone is asking a question of Adam Driver's character. Adam Driver's character is giving a press conference, and someone asks him a question at the press conference. And the way they do it is it's audio from the film asking him the question. But at my screening, a rep for Lionsgate actually stood up and mimed like he was asking the question. So it was him like pretending to ask the question, but he wasn't actually saying it. The way I understand it is when they screened this at Cannes, they actually had someone literally asking the question out loud. What they're going to do for the theatrical release and the eventual is they're going to have someone off camera reading the question. But they did have someone at my screening stand up and pretend to be asking the question. And they actually did like a thing where like they turned up the house lights and stuff.
I was going to say, did they put a spotlight on there? How did that work?
Obviously, they're not going to be doing that for normal theatrical screenings, but the scene is still in the movie. It just has someone off camera asking the question.
Gotcha. Okay. Wow. Yeah. Fascinating stuff. So, I'm right there with Chris. I love the fact that this movie exists. I'm going on vacation next week, so I don't think I'm going to be able to see it immediately. I'm so curious if it'll still even be playing in theaters near me, like a week after it opens, because, it just the prospects of the financial prospects of the movie don't look great, but, I love the idea that like, this legend of cinema, legend of the director's chair, is still out there just cranking stuff out. And like, yeah. I think even though he has this legendary status, I think he's, it's not to say that this movie is above reproach or like
beyond
criticism or anything like that. It's just, I love that this is happening. So excellent. I'm very curious to see this one for myself. So that's Megalopolis. I think it comes out in theaters next Friday. Is that right?
Yes, that's right.
Okay. And then tell me about this next one that you saw, because I watched this movie as well, and I'm struggling to be able to even like sum this movie up in a succinct way. So I want to see if you can do it.
Before I get into that, Ben, I just want to say I was not trying to throw our own Ryan Scott under the bus talking about. I was just using it as an example to say, like, I know we cover box office and I know there's a way to do it, but I personally don't care.
Totally.
Yeah, but the movie, the next movie in question is The Substance, which is from a filmmaker who I really like, and I don't know how to say her name. How do you think we'd say her name, Ben? Coralie Farragut, I guess is how you would say it. She's French, so.
Yeah, maybe Fargeau, but I honestly
Farge,
have no idea.
Maybe?
Yeah,
Coralie Farge, that sounds right.
Let's go with that.
So she directed this excellent, brutal movie called Revenge, which came out a few years ago. And I thought that movie was fantastic. And this is her follow-up. It's a much bigger movie, I guess, than Revenge, although it once again only deals with like a select few characters. I really like this. This is a excellent film. It's a very funny film. It's a very disturbing film. It has an incredible ending that I won't spoil, but man, it's a hoot to watch. I really liked this. I was really impressed with it, and I would love if this got like award season love, just because I want to see a movie that's this like crazy get award season love. Let's spice up award season. Let's recognize movies like this.
Yeah, I totally agree. I watched this with my wife, and we were not expecting where this movie goes. I'll just say that. I was kind of like, I felt, like almost guilty that I had been like, hey, let's watch this Demi Moore movie. Let's spend a night together just watching this film. Like, this movie just really goes to some places that I had no idea where it was going to end up. So, Demi Moore, Margaret Qualley are in this. Dennis Quaid has not been this good in a long time. He has a very small role in this, but he's just like perfectly disgusting. How would you describe the plot of this, Chris, without really getting into what happens in like the third act?
It's kind of like Death Becomes Her, but grosser, I guess. It's really, it's about women, how they're held to high, especially like women in show business, how they're held to these ridiculous beauty standards. Demi Moore is, she's an actress who's become like a fitness guru, and she's just turned 50. And even though by every logical reasoning you can think of, Demi Moore looks great, she looks incredible, she's, considered washed up, over the hill, and she's too old to be in show business. And she gets like fired from her job, And I don't think this is a spoiler. I think it's like, it's okay to give this away because it's in the, like the trailers and stuff like that. She learns of this thing called the substance, which can create a better you, a younger you. And she decides to take advantage of it. And this spawns a new person played by Margaret Qualley, who's like the younger, hotter version of her. I guess that's really all we'll say without, you know, going into further territory. And you know, like, problems arise from this.
Yeah, it's really interesting the way that this movie handles the rules of its world, because when Demi Moore's character finds out about this substance, it comes with a set of instructions, and it kind of lays out a little bit of what to expect here, but it doesn't really give away a ton, and it doesn't really provide a detailed beat by beat breakdown of exactly how this process works. And I thought it was interesting the way that the movie divvied out some of that information over the course of it, because like at certain times you kind of think that the Margaret Qualley version is basically the same consciousness at Demi Moore as Demi Moore's version, yeah. Like half of this character, but then in other instances it's like they're two totally separate people. So I didn't know if that was just like a commentary on the different sides of ourselves and the way that we kind of can cordon off information in our own heads, and if there was like something specific, a larger point trying to be made there, or if that was just the filmmaker not getting bogged down in the literal nature that sometimes happens with projects like this, where like you have to follow the rules as laid out, you know, by the exact letter of the law, or else people like me will complain on the internet about how it doesn't make sense. But to be clear, I don't think that about this movie. I think this movie actually it benefits by not really getting too much into those details. But I was curious what you thought about the way that the movie kind of plays fast and loose with its rules a little bit.
Yeah, you know, I kind of had, I don't want to say a problem with it because I think the movie works anyway, but I did think they keep stressing that they are supposed to be the same person, but it really seems like they don't have each other's like memories, which is like, I'm not really sure I'm guessing this has to be intentional, but it did like throw me for a loop a little bit from time to time. Cause there are specific scenes where it really seems like they don't like Demi Moore's character will do something and Margaret Qualley will seemingly have no recollection of it. Like, sure. Right. And it's like, so I'm not entirely sure what they're going for there. So, but I think the movie works anyway, but I did think it was kind of like strange the way they handle that.
Yeah, this is a really unforgettable movie. I really don't think I'm ever going to be able to wipe this one from my brain. It's just, it's so, there's this obsession with youth in it, and there's this self-loathing that Demi Moore is so good at portraying. There's this moment where she's in front of a mirror, I'll just say that is like, oh my God, it just got me, you know, cut me to the quick. It's just right dagger to the heart kind of moment. And she is incredible in this movie. And the film is like so obsessed with beauty that there are so many shots in this. I the movie's like, whatever, 2.5 hours or something like that. And I think, I don't know, maybe a good, like, it seems like a good 30 minutes of that is just close-ups of writhing skin and like, yeah. You know, pulsating bodies and just like, crotch shots and ass shots, and like when Margaret Qualley's character has taken over and has her own TV show, her own workout TV show, because she's like the young new star on the block or whatever, the movie just really goes out of its way to, this is like a totally unsubtle movie. This movie has never heard the word subtlety. Like, no, all of its messages are absolutely slammed over your head. And I thought it was interesting because obviously I think there is maybe initially supposed to be a sort of titillation factor to all of these close-up shots, because there are all these men in this movie who are just like ogling these women. But I think the movie does that so often. It shows these close-ups of thighs and crotches and all of this stuff, you know, cleavage and all of this stuff so often that it kind of like wears down that concept to where I kind of take a step back and I'm like, man, this whole thing is just like a little ridiculous, isn't it? Like this whole thing is kind of like, and by that I mean like our obsession with youth as a culture and yeah. with sex, and like because the movie focuses so clearly on it, I kind of had a thought halfway through where I'm like, we're all just kind of animals, you know, like, you know, it removes the titillation factor. I'm stumbling over a way to articulate this, but do you know what I'm talking about, Chris?
No, absolutely. I mean, and yeah, the movie leans into this deliberately, and yeah, it is just absurd. I mean, the absurdity is just in the fact that like I said, Demi Moore looks incredible. Like she's gorgeous. And yet in the movie, it's like underscored that like she's like quote unquote the ugly one. And it's like, it's like, you know, that we as a culture have built this world for ourselves where we like obsess over you. I mean, it's just ludicrous in general. Like, I mean, I don't feel like we need the movie to tell us this, but like I've encountered this, like, if you're online, people online are very young, and sometimes you read things they say, and they act like turning, like, 31 is, like, over the hill. And it's like, you're,
yeah.
It's like, I'm 41. Like, I would sell my soul to be 31 again. Like, are you kidding me? Like, Jesus Christ. Like, people are insane. Like, you know, like, it's just, like, it's crazy that people have built this into their heads where, like, you reach a certain age and like, that's it, I'm done. It's like, come on. Like, you don't know what you're missing out on, you know, before mm-hmm. it's too late. You know?
Yeah. This movie won the best screenplay award at the Cannes Film Festival this year. And so I hope that, like you were saying, that it basically goes on to get a lot of awards attention and stuff, because if for no other reason, Chris, than just the idea of Demi Moore being nominated for Best Actress or something, I'm so curious what clip they would choose to show footage from this movie, because there's some stuff in the back half of this movie that is unlike anything I've ever seen in my entire life. So
yeah,
I really just, yeah, like you said, I kind of love the idea of something this out there being considered in the, you know, I think of like the buttoned up Tony movies of my youth at the Oscars, where like Oscar contenders are very serious movies and stuff like that. And this movie is, it gets at some very serious subject matter, but the way it goes there, the way it goes about that is in like the most gonzo way imaginable. So
yeah, absolutely.
I think we're going to be talking a little bit more about this movie on tomorrow's episode. If all goes well, we're going to be talking about body horror movies. So I guess we can say now that there's a body horror component to this. And that was part of what I was not expecting. So we'll try not to spoil anything more beyond that. But hopefully if everything goes according to plan, we'll be talking more about body horror movies on tomorrow's episode. So maybe people can look forward to that. Any closing thoughts on The Substance that we didn't have a chance to get into yet, Chris?
No, I just, like I said, I really want this to have award season love, because like, why not? Just nominate Demi Moore. She's earned it at this point. Why not? She's good. She's good in this movie. And I don't want to say anymore because anymore would be giving a spoiler, but I really am curious to see how people react to the ending of this movie, because the ending is, I think, my favorite part, honestly, like the last half hour.
Awesome. Okay, cool. I think that'll do it for today's episode of the show. You can find more about all the things that we mentioned on the show at slashfilm.com. I will link to a bunch of Chris's reviews in the show notes. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really helps us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll talk to you all tomorrow.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.